detour Death Holler brought us. Season 3, Slash or Pass. It became the classic horror film podcast of its time. And now Death Holler brings us the most shocking season ever. Season 4, Dead or Dead.
Yeah, they're dead. They're all messed up.
Imagine, if you will, that one of the hosts is absolutely terrified of zombies.
So, what's the plan? Bash him in the head. That seems to work out.
Now, accept the fact there is no escaping this horror. Death Holler brings back the dead. Remember, when you're in Death Holler, listener discretion is advised. With hospitality like this, you'll never want to leave. We hope you stay alive.
When there's no more room in hell, the dead will walk the earth.
Welcome back to Death Holler. I'm your host, Reverend Dr. Death, and joining me as always is my co-host, La Urena. Whoa, space slugs. You hate them, right? I hate them myself. I'm waiting for her to say goodnight, everybody.
I know. I'm like ready to hit. I'm about to play the music.
All right. Let's see. We got some more space slugs this episode. We've got some creatures from the movie Slither, or Shivers, I should say, coming up in here. And it's not a good time whenever they start coming in at you and causing everybody around you to basically get a little grapey, as it were. So,
a little?
Yeah, yeah. Just a little bit grapey. Let's see here. We're rounding out the space slugs with the Shivers coverage from 1975 and Life Force from, let's see, what year was that?
I think that one was 1985.
1985, so 10 years apart. Drastically different movie from one another. We also have a lot of sex going on in Shivers. It's a different kind of zombie movie. I don't know if Urena's going to survive this one by the end of it. We'll see what she thinks about this. First up, though, podcast plug. If you're enjoying the podcast, we'd appreciate it if you could take the time to like, comment, subscribe on whatever podcast platform you prefer. It helps us get more visibility on podcast listings and helps us grow. Also, consider following us on social media. You can find us on TikTok and Twitter under Death Holler Pod, and we can be found on Instagram and Facebook under Death Holler Podcast. We appreciate everyone who listens and hope you enjoy the show, and keep those comments coming because we love to hear them.
Oh, yeah, and we're having a good old time.
Shivers from 1975, tagline, going mad is just the beginning.
Yeah, I mean, it is. It fits.
That's true to the movie. First official movie from David Cronenberg that we've already covered during space slugs, or just parasitic life form zombies. Music written by David Cronenberg, music by Ivan Reitman, who just did supervisor work. He basically did what Romero did in Night of the Living Dead and took like stock music and kind of worked it in there in places. Made for a budget of $179,000 Canadian. It made $5 million US, and I think to this day remains one of the most profitable Canadian movies that's ever been made.
Profitable and problematic. Because they were not happy with this. Some of the Canadian, I don't know, higher ups of, I don't know who the fuck, but they were not pleased.
Well, I mean, I don't think that I know you couldn't get away with making this movie now, but no. I don't even know how they made it back then, to be perfectly honest with you.
I know.
The 70s were different, but they wasn't that different.
It was, I had heard one of the Canadian representatives, like, if this is what we need to have a Canadian film, or if this is what it takes to have a Canadian film industry, maybe we don't need a Canadian film industry. So this movie raised a lot of red flags. So in Canada, I didn't hear anything about America. So I guess we'll get into that.
Jeez. I mean, yeah, Canadians are not as puritanical about some of this stuff as we are. So I can only imagine. Principal players. We have Paul Hampton playing Roger St. Luke, the physician just trying to solve the cause of deaths and going on inside of this high rise building. Eventually trying not to get molested by everybody involved. Basically, the only real movie I saw him in besides this, it stood out to me, was Waxwork 2 Lost in Time, which I believe he plays the bad guy in. That movie actually has zombies in it as well, because the whole movie starts out in the first Waxwork, like they're bouncing amongst like these Waxwork displays, and they're basically, when you go in them, they become realistic. And if you die in them, and it's kind of a sacrificial thing because that's, you know, what they're doing. But if you die in them, then you die in the display in real life. And then, you know, the display changes to, you know, show that you died. Zach Galligan in the movie, goes into basically a Dawn of the Dead scenario where he's like in a mall full of zombies at one point and like cuts one of their hands off. Well, at the end of that movie, the hand is the only thing that escapes like the fire in the wax museum. And it actually goes, it crawls its way back to his parents' house and like kills his parents. And so he's on trial at the beginning of part two because of a zombie hand that killed his parents, basically, that nobody believes him. So he has to actually go back into the waxwork to prove that these creatures are real, so he can kind of, you know, prove that he's innocent.
Idle Hands.
Yeah. It's something similar. Yeah. It's but it's much better done. They're cheesy, but they're well done for what they are. I would technically label them more as like monster movies, though, because they have like Frankenstein and, you know, Dracula and stuff like that. But they do have zombies in them at one point. Lynn Lowry, who has already been referenced in this under Rabid, because the nurse or the woman in the picture behind the evil doctor in the Rabid remake was Lynn Lowry. So, and I can't really blame the guy for going psychotic when his wife died if she looked like the woman in this movie.
Oh, yeah.
Nurse Forsyth, hello, nurse, if you know that reference from back in the 90s. I mean, whoa. I mean, and the way the movie ends, I think I would risk the parasite, just saying. She's been in a bunch of stuff, though. She was in Romero's The Crazies. I prefer the remake, but, you know, it's almost a zombie movie. It's about people who were driven crazy by, like, some kind of gas or something, toxin that's released by the government.
Yeah.
I Drink Your Blood. Sugar Cookies, which is an X-rated movie with Mary Warrenoff, the female scientist from Night of the Comet. So link there. And she's in a more recent movie called Attack of the Corn Zombies.
Oh, my God.
So there you go. Joe Silver plays Rollo Linsky, the parasite researcher in the movie. We have covered him already under the original Rabid from 1977. He was the guy who actually his kid ends up, you know, getting killed by his wife or whatever toward the end of the movie in Rabid, and then he gets killed by her, taking the main character, driving him around, Maurice or whatever in that movie. He was also in Creepshow, though. He did a voiceover during the segments for that, so was kind of interesting.
Wasn't he the actual creep himself?
That's what I'm saying. Like he might have been, like, you know, doing like the little animated segments in that movie. So he probably was the creep toward the end of the movie. Alan Coleman plays Nicholas Tudor, who's an adulterer who got a hell of an STD.
Yeah.
He was in Seven and Air Force One. So those are some pretty high profile movies later on. Susan Petrie plays Janine Tudor, who is the pixie housewife of that shitbag husband. She doesn't get the parasite from him, but she gets it from her best friend, played by Barbara Steele, aka Bette, who is the goth best friend to Susan. And Barbara Steele was a looker back in the day, and she was in a ton of like gothic movies. Black Sunday, The Pit and the Pendulum. She actually did voice over work in the Castlevania animated TV show on Netflix. And Caged Heat, because why not? When you look like Barbara Steele, you do movies like that. I don't know how you say this one guy's name. So it's Ronald, and it looks like Moldzik or Moldick. Yeah. Who plays Merrick, who's the smarmy apartment manager. Wally Martin plays the doorman, who's the Canadian Barney Fife, and literally always doesn't even fire his damn gun, even though he makes the point of saying he has it. Fred Dieterlin plays Emil Hobbs, who is a doctor with a twisted fetish. He wants people to basically regress mentally to the point that they just fuck it, feed. And I guess, I mean, we'd be happier, I suppose, in certain ways. And then we have Kathy Graham playing Annabelle, the apartment whore, who gets the whole thing started.
Hey.
Because she's got all them slugs all up in her and passing them to everybody around. Synopsis. After a doctor researcher brutally murders a young prostitute in an upscale apartment complex, an investigation takes place to figure out why. The on-site clinician, Dr. St. Luke, working with detectives, tries to piece together the strange situation while also trying to find a cause for a seemingly unrelated increase in bodily cysts that are affecting the apartment's occupants. Meanwhile, a businessman and husband suffering from one of those cysts after his visit to the hooker begins expelling slug-like parasites that begin attacking his neighbors. Sex-crazed lunatics begin doing everything physically possible to get everyone around them infected as Dr. St. Luke and his hot nurse try to survive. Betts gets a slug in the tub. Tudor has a new friend you can rub. And giving yourself to Nurse Forsyth in a pool isn't the worst way to go. Amen, brother. Other taglines. T-E-R-R-O-R. T-E-R-R-O-R, beyond the power of priest or science to exercise.
That's fucking horrible.
That's what it is. And then being terrified is just the beginning, I guess.
Yeah, that's better than... I mean, it's not better than going mad is just the beginning. I do like going mad. Being terrified is a lot better than T-E-R-R-O. Stop.
That sounds like a bad country song. Yeah. I smell T-R-O-U-B-L-E.
Shut up.
anyways, Rollo Linsky, I probably lost all the fans who love that song. I hate when songs spell out words. I'm sorry.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
Quotes, Rollo Linsky. Now, Hobbs believed that man is an animal that thinks too much, an over-rational animal that lost its touch with its body and its instincts. How do you like that? In other words, too much brains, not enough guts. So he came up with to help our guts along was a parasite, a combination of aphrodisiac and venereal disease that will hopefully turn the world into one beautiful mindless orgy. That kind of sets up your plot. And then the old woman, hungry for love. I'm hungry for love. That was, she gets it.
If she takes it.
She takes it. And then finally, Forsyth. Roger, I had a very disturbing dream last night. In this dream, I found myself making love to a strange man. Only I'm having trouble, you see, because he's old and dying and he smells bad and I find him repulsive. But then he tells me that everything is erotic and that everything is sexual. You know what I mean? He tells me that even old flesh is erotic flesh. That disease is the love of two alien kinds of creatures for each other. That even dying is an act of eroticism. That talking is sexual. That breathing is sexual. That even the physically exist is sexual. And I believe him. And we make love beautifully. And that's when you know that Nurse Forsyth has gotten the bug.
Uh-oh.
And she's just wanting to fuck.
I mean...
And she wanted to fuck Roger at the beginning of the movie, and the dude just took that because, I mean, hell, everything went to hell in a handbasket, and he could have at least had one good night before, you know, the parasite took over. But he didn't do it.
Well.
And I'm mad at him for it.
You're taking it real personal.
Yeah, I am real personal. All right, visually, this movie is raw, like as raw as you can get, because of the fact that it looks like it was filmed on somebody's like, I mean, if it was filmed today, it looks like, I mean, of course it's grainy and all that, but if it was filmed if they did a version today, it would look like it was filmed on somebody's cell phone.
Yeah,
like, I mean,
a flip phone, not like an iPhone or an Android.
No, not a good one, but I'm just saying, like, it's the kind of, like, there's nothing fancy about the way it doesn't look like a film. It looks like a documentary. That's basically what I'm getting at. Like, the visuals look like a documentary. The slugs are, and Cronenberg mentions this, and that's actually in the first part of the trivia. The slugs are a bit wonky because they're, you know, they didn't have a big budget. And they were just basically dragging them around with wires, and they didn't have like CGI or anything fancy to, but they're effective. I mean, that one inside of Tudor's gut or whatever, when it comes out, like, that thing looks pretty fucking gnarly when like, moving around.
Yeah, I didn't think it was terrible. I mean, you know it's 1975, so.
And you know it's a low-budget movie. But having said that, they did the best they could with what they had. I actually enjoy the story. I mean, visually, other than that, I mean, you know, the lighting is it like I said, it looks like a documentary. It doesn't, nothing stands out visually really about the movie.
Mm-mm.
But it's the story that gets me, because I don't, they'll never make this movie again, but I think the idea of, like, the parasite, like, doing everything in its power to propagate itself by its host, like, you know, doing obscene, like, sexual things, that's a first, and it actually makes sense to me on a scientific level. Like, I mean, there are parasites out there that will, for instance, in rats, that will make the rats bold enough to get near cats so the cats will eat them and spread it into the cat.
Yeah.
This is just like the parasite realizing that humans are apex predators. It's not going to get any better. So what, instead of killing the other host, let's just fuck our way into them.
I mean, but, like, did they even... I feel like the sexuality was like a secondhand kind of side effect, because really they could have just gave you the phallic worm through your mouth or any orifice that it created, if you will, any orifice it wanted to go through, to be honest, without the sex having to be involved.
They kind of do, but it's like they're working on their host's, like, you know, sexual drive, because that's like one of the main primal instincts for, like, creatures is to propagate. And to feed, I mean, really. So it's just working on, like, the easiest way to get to another person is to work on the sexual, you know, like, drive. It's like, I gotta get something, you know. And it's just that later on in the movie, like, I mean, there is, I mentioned this on another one of these, like, at one point. The stuff that's happening in the background is very disturbing, this movie, when you put any thought to it whatsoever. There is a scene where a guy has two kids on leashes, and you're like, I'm not even entertaining what happened in that.
Yeah.
There's the one scene later on that spells it out for you, where the guy is like, do you like my daughter? Do you want to fuck my daughter? And then, like, and then he starts making out with his daughter, and I'm like, no, that's, you showed that one, you know?
Yes. Yeah, and that's the thing is, like, and no one wants to talk about it either. Because I tried Googling that stuff, and nobody wants to talk about it.
And it's all in the background, but it's all in the movie. It gets more perverse, which makes sense, but it gets more perverse as the movie goes on. You're seeing shit, and you're like, I don't want to know what just why they're, like, dressed up like a dog. And no, you stay right back there where you belong. Don't get near the camera. You know,
yep.
That's the entire movie.
Yep.
I do have to say, though, I got anxiety at points in this movie because it's one thing to be eaten. It's another to be graped. And
yes,
when there's a bunch of the zombies in this movie and they're coming after Nurse Forsyth for in particular, like I was getting anxious. I was like, no, they're going to get you're going to be used all kinds of ways. Get the fuck out of there. Yeah. Like now.
Run, bitch.
I was even worried for the doctor. I mean, less so than the female, obviously, but like, I mean, he's got orifices too, and they ain't afraid to use them.
No,
and
they're not. Did we roll into story? Are we still in visuals a little bit?
We're in between because okay. I was going to mention something that's a combination story slash visual here in a second, but go ahead.
I just wanted to say that this movie just looked like a total 70s film. I mean, we had these bright orange doors. We had a lot of fucking...
It almost looks like a porn film, to be honest, from the 70s.
Did you say it looks like a porn film? Because it practically is a porn film. Maybe a softcore porn, but...
Yeah. I mean, they're not... But well, I don't... I mean, the hints are more... porn than porn. Like, I mean, in a lot, it's just that they don't show the actual penetrations. The only thing that you're not getting in this movie.
Yeah, that's why I went with more softcore than anything because we didn't have the actual visual penetration.
But if you can think of something degenerate, they put it somewhere in this movie.
They did.
I swear
they didn't hold back.
What I was going to say visually, though, that stands out to me is the scene at the end with the pool. Like, he has no other place to go. He runs out the door. The line of the grape zombies, like, standing on the hill above him, and they're coming. I'm like, all right, you're fine. I mean, that's not in the grape sense, but when I have nightmares, that's my nightmare. It's just they're all over the place, and I have literally no place to run. Like, I'm done, you know. That's my nightmare.
I wonder if you could, like, especially for the guys, if you could, like, kick them in the dick. Or if you kick a woman in the fucking clit, that shit hurts. I wonder if you could, like, start doing that. Just put on some pointy-toed shoes and start kicking right where it hurts.
Doesn't he kick some woman in the crotch in this movie? Or does some of her crotch?
Did I miss that?
I feel like he does right at the end in the pool. Like, right before he sees Forsyth, he, like, hits a woman, like, in that region, and she just kind of, like, it doesn't do anything. He's like, fuck. And then Forsyth comes over, and he realizes, I mean, he knows that he's done, but, like, he just lets go. Like, you know, that's what got me at the end of it. It's like, you go through all that stuff, and then you get to that final scene, or it's not really even the final scene. The final scene is them going out to the world to infect everybody.
Yes.
But, like, but to me, the major final scene is him in that pool, and then she just comes over and she opens her mouth and he just gives into it. It's just like, I'm fucked. If I'm going to go, at least I'm going with the hottest woman here.
Yeah.
That's basically what he does.
He probably should have gotten into her first before, you know, at least tried that. Gone out with some pleasure rather than some fear.
That's true. The worst thing is that, and one of the worst parts of them for him is that he only leaves her for like a split second when she's in that car, but that's just enough for the one grape zombie to get her.
Yeah.
Like, she's there, she's struggling, he's dealing with something else. When he finally gets up there, he thinks he's got her away scot-free, but then when she wakes up, she mentions all that about the dream, and it's like, that's when, for the audience, you're like, she's fucked. She's got it. She's got it.
Good Lord.
She's your Venus. She's your fire. She's got something that'll burn your penis off.
Yeah, pretty much.
anything else you was going to say about the visuals, or do you want to say anything about the story, or?
I mean, I don't know what to say. It felt like we've already kind of pointed out the obvious of this story just taking every controversial aspect it could and putting it into the film and just putting it out there. And I think it's a good... It's the 70s, so we're talking about sexual liberation is what we're talking about. But I feel like this movie kind of made me understand why conservatives came down so hard on shit like this. Because once you start liberating sex, for one, everyone wants sexual liberation. And that's when you start getting, you know, I don't care about, you know, gay or lesbian sex or whatnot. I don't care. I don't feel like that hurts anybody, honestly.
But when you start getting the maps involved, then
getting maps, you start getting children and people that want to exploit. And maybe there's people that have great fantasies, and that's fine if that's consensual behind closed doors. But then you start having the people that think that, you know, well, I want to live out that fantasy. It's my dream. But what if it's not the person who's involved? So you start getting into these weird, not even gray areas, just areas that should not be involved. And I'm like, fuck, when it came to sexual liberation in the 70s, that still included the bad stuff. You know, people that maybe didn't consent, younger people specifically, you know, and I'm like, man, I'm maybe it's just me getting older, but I'm like, fuck, I understand why conservatives felt the need to, hey, whoa, 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 we got to tighten this down, you know?
It makes me wonder if Cronenberg had like that working, like, you know, because I mean, some of these best movies, like, I mean, we mentioned it with Romero, they have a underlying theme. If that's exactly what you're talking about, that was his commentary on the sexual liberation. It's like, are we going to go too far? Are we more beast than man at this point when we can't control our sexual urges and just let them fly like this? You know,
if anything, the worm could have represented a drug that people were taking back in the day, even today, that can, you know, make people
increase
act this
your
way.
Libido and
everything and make
and
you
let
do
go
things
of your
that
inhibitions
exactly. And, so, you know, in that aspect of, in terms of the story, I feel like that works really well. And I do think that showing it, while some people probably enjoyed what they were watching that shouldn't have been enjoyed in this film. I think some people kind of were irked by it and disgusted and angry. And I think that you kind of should see that because you should feel that way.
I think it's a good thing to be made uncomfortable in that way because it makes you think and it makes you assess. It's like, where's my line? Mm-hmm. And when did this cross it? And what does that mean for me? And what does that, you know?
Yes.
And it makes you go down those lines, you know?
100%. 100%. So while I was irked by a lot of things, I don't think that this film should not have been made.
Yeah, it's like, it's always the argument that people have with, like, when you're trying to censor art or when you're trying to, like, burn books or whatever. It's like there is such thing as pornography and feels for its own sake, but there are certain things that make you think and make you question, you know, like it you know, and basically debate what you're seeing and like, and what that means for society in general. And if it does that and it sparks that, you know, discussion, then that's what art is supposed to do. It's supposed to challenge you to a certain degree. You're not supposed to sit there and look at it. It's like, that's a pretty daffodil. I mean, you can do that, but like great art is just like you look at it and it's like, but why did they make it like, you know, have these colors? Like, what is that? You know, like there's an underlying discussion in this movie, like definitely along the lines of what you're saying. You're watching it and you're like, I don't feel comfortable with anything that's going on, but that's kind of a good thing.
Yes.
Because that makes me reassess like where my stance is on this and why it's a good thing that we kind of tamp this down,
yes,
you know, the way that we do.
100%.
Or if you're on the opposite side of it, you think that we don't go far enough.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if I want to know you, just, you know, there's places on the internet for you. They make dolls for you now. just go and do those things.
Yeah, I don't know what to make of that, but I'm like, you know, I want to be on if it keeps you from doing it, but I feel like it's just one of those. It's one of those things where they say that people that kill animals, you know, that's just the start, and I feel like dolls could be just the start too.
Yeah.
I want to know what the real thing's like.
That's the two arguments. It's like, you know, on the one side, it's like, okay, if they're doing that, then they're not doing it to people or, you know, kids or whatever it is. So then that, but then at the other side of it is, well, they're not, but when is that not enough?
Yeah, exactly.
And when do they move on to the next thing?
Exactly. You know? So, and if you guys don't know what the hell we're talking about in this movie, we are talking about some really weird, non-enjoyable to me scenes that involve kids.
There's that. I mean, even just the stuff that involves
rape in general. Yeah, that's true.
Stuff is, none of it's consensual in the movie.
That is true. Like,
I mean, even the scene between Betts and Mrs. Tudor, like, they're just friends. They're just friends. But, like, when that takes over, that's all out of the question because, I mean, that's a forced lesbian relationship. And, there's nothing against the, if it's consensual. But, neither one of them, you know, was that way. And it's just the, you know, the parasites making them do that sort of thing.
This is how that scene would have gone if it were me and Kayla. I would have punched Kayla in the face or Kayla would have punched me in the face. We barely hug, let alone try to put a little kissy kiss on each other. So sorry if anyone ever had any fantasies of that being a thing. You're going to get something on your lips. It's going to be my fist.
And unlike Tom Green, it's not going to be your mom. Or I guess that was Slim Shady that said that. Or no, one of the two. Anyways, I can't remember how. One
my bum is on your lips? Point.
Yeah. That's the thing. I mean, like, also, I was going to say visually, Slither totally stole that bathtub scene.
Oh, yeah.
Like, from this movie. Mm-hmm. Like, it's almost exactly the same, except for the fact the parasite goes in an orifice mm-hmm. in this movie. I mean, there's no ifs, ands, or buts about that.
Might have been the butt it went up.
Woman in Slither doesn't get that. No, so
it tries to go right down the gullet.
It goes the other way. Still looks sexual, still kind of creepy, but it's not as bad as what happens in this.
Yes.
But story wise, I mean, yeah, you got the goofiness at the beginning of it with a doctor trying to create this and a prostitute, and then, you know, him like, and you don't even know what the, I mean, this movie starts out with a bang because he's literally sitting there trying to kill this woman, right? This looks like a young girl right from the get go. Like, yes. You're like, what? Did the movie start like 20 minutes ago and I missed it because, like, who are these people?
Yeah.
Why am I, you know, and then nope, right into it. And then you go from there. It doesn't hold back.
Yeah.
But I'm serious about the zombiness of it. Like, I mean, there was the one thing that stood out to me because it had very much like Dawn of the Dead vibes was the scene where Forsyth and the doctor, even though Forsyth had just kind of got infected, she was still not quite there yet. They were going down that one hallway made of like pallets on each side. Yes. Where there was pallets set up and the hands reaching through. Yes. Trying to grab them. I'm like, that's classic zombie movie right there.
It,
you know,
it is, but I don't think this is a zombie movie. This is one of those
infected person
yeah, at best. Alien slug. Was it aliens? Not alien slug.
They're not alien slugs. They're terrestrial. They're just, you know, they've been mutated.
Okay. So, and these people weren't, were they, I'm trying to think if I'm messing up. Oh no, I'm thinking of the next film that we're reviewing, but, why am I forgetting if these people can be killed or not?
They can be killed. I mean, but if you kill then it's kind of like it was in Night of the Creeps, like the parasites. Yes. Can still hop out of. Yes. Them and get into somebody else.
100%. So, yeah, this is more infected human, which zombies can be, but they're being used, whereas a zombie has a goal. Ah, so do these, though. They have a goal to fucking fuck you up, literally.
Literally.
I don't know. They're not zombies.
This one's way more than your argument against, like, you know, Night of the Creeps or whatever. This one's like, I mean, it's right on the line of being like a zombie movie. If we argue that 28 Days Later is a zombie movie because they're infected humans, they've got a virus in their brain that's driving them to attack other people. This is right there on the same wavelength with that.
Yeah.
Same exact thing.
But they look like zombies. In 28 Days Later, these people don't.
They
look like sexy beasts.
Some of their stares are like very much like hungry, but in a different way type stares.
Exactly.
You know?
I'm not buying that this is a zombie film.
It's got the vibes. Like you've got people outnumbered. The, they're getting, you know.
I'm struggling with the the worms, with the weenie worms.
Oh, I can't. Oh man, it's one thing if they hop into a JJ. I mean, but can you imagine if they do that thing like the fish do in the anaconda, where they swim up a pee hole in a guy? Oh God. That'd be a bad one.
That would, yeah.
Because those are big slugs in this movie. So.
Yeah. Ouch. That's all I got to say. Anyways.
But, yeah, the initial doctor creating them, whatever, that's just a way to get into the movie. It's actually the stuff that happens after that really ramps it up and makes it, I think, for like an introductory movie by a filmmaker, like this is, Cronenberg's like very first official movie that he made. I mean, he went all out. Like, he made a name for himself. I'll just say that much.
Yes.
Like, you come out with a movie like this, I mean, your name's, it's like, oh, you're that one crazy fucker that made that movie, right? Yeah. I don't know if we can work with you.
Exactly. But, it can make or break you.
You did something. We'll give you that much.
Stuff was done.
That man went on to make the Fly remake with Jeff Goldblum. That just blows my mind.
Yes.
That you went from that to that, you know, that craziness. I feel like Rabid was like an evolution of this movie, one that's more palatable to people.
Yes.
But I don't know, some of his stuff after that, it's like, that's the Shivers. That guy made this. Okay. You know, the acting in the movie, there's no standouts in it. I mean, it's either a documentary or a porn film, whatever you want to call it.
It's a docuporn.
It's got that kind of acting. It's a docuporn. It's got that kind of acting to it. For better or worse, that's kind of, we gave credit to the porn star that starred in the original Rabid movie for being as good as she was. I feel like the Nurse Forsyth in this, I mean, she was okay, but you still kind of got the vibe that she had just got off exploitation movies when she came to this. Like,
possibly, yeah. I mean, I thought that she was kind of standout because of how gorgeous she was. So,
yes, yeah, it was definitely her looks, but I'm saying acting wise, you know, there wasn't nothing setting the world on fire. It's just you were visually drawn to her, you know, but I mean, other than that, nothing she did really stood out to me that well,
yeah.
Music, it's stock music.
It's 70s really, music.
Kind of fits the docuporn that we just said. So, anything else you want to talk about before we get into the trivia on this one?
I want to go off the movie topic real quick to discuss music because Sabrina Carpenter recently did a video that me and you are very, I would say I'm obsessed with it. I don't know about you, but it's very much mimics.
I really enjoy it.
Yes. There's a lot of horror aspects in it. Not just Death Becomes Her, but Death Becomes Her happens to be one of the biggest ones that stands out. But the reason why I'm bringing up music is because we're talking about how basically Ivan Reitman has taken, much like, what's his name? Why can't I think right now? In terms of music, taking clips and whatever, they can't samples that are not, don't have any kind of copyrights on them.
Right.
Yes. Ivan Reitman, and then who else was it? Big director, Night of the Living Dead.
George Romero.
George, he did that too, right?
Yeah, he did that for the original Night of the Living Dead, and he did that for a lot of the stuff in Dawn of the Dead.
Well, it just so happens that one of Sabrina Carpenter's biggest hits right now, called Espresso, did that. They went on a website. I think I sent you the TikTok because I'm like, we could probably use some of this, you know, for Death Holler, our podcast, where for 10 cents you can have copyrights, you know, to whatever. But they took a beat from that website and they turned, and all they did was roll the beat over and over and over. They didn't change a single thing about it. They kind of gave it like a little, where it kind of faded out at the beginning, but then it faded back in. Other than that, they used the exact beat, and she has the hugest hit, one of the hugest hits out right now on TikTok and just in general on the musical charts. And I find that to be so funny.
Nothing to take away from the music, but I feel like that video was what's making that song so popular because they put so much into it, and it doesn't hurt that she's making out with Jenna Ortega that video.
100%. Now, that's not the song I'm talking about that she did this. It's just I wanted to bring her up.
Oh, okay.
I wanted to make sure you knew who I was talking about. I figured you did, but I, you know, that I do like that song. And I do love that music video. And Sabrina Carpenter is one of the few artists right now that is trying to bring music videos back. Good for her.
And I think that's how you stand out.
Mm-hmm. Absolutely. So anyways, I just wanted to say that because when we talk about these movie directors and, you know, any music producers on films that are like pulling music this way, I used to think that that was kind of cheap. I'm starting to, more and more we hear about it, I'm starting to think it's actually very smart. You can make a lot of money by not spending a lot of money.
And if you do it the right way, which is what Romero did, then you can actually, I mean, I think I've heard a rescored version of Night of the Living Dead because it came, they did an anniversary edition in the 90s or whatever that Russo came out with, and they rescored it, and it is so shitty compared to the score that Romero put in there. So it actually was better with the sampled stuff than it was with the other score, orchestral score that he put in it later. So.
Oh, and with Dawn of the Dead, who would have known that the gonk would be so fucking popular? That does. I stand on business when I say that song does not go with that movie, but it does. It's so happy and cheerful, but it's not a happy and cheerful moment.
No.
It's like, everything's okay, everybody. Let's just go about our happy day as a fucking zombie.
And then you're just sitting there like, what the? That fits. Why?
Why does this work?
It's like, just like we talked about, it's like Deo in the original Beetlejuice. So anyways.
Yeah. Okay. Moving on. That's what I wanted to get by with music. So.
Trivia. David Cronenberg laments not having the benefit of CG to make the slug look better, or at least erase the wires that they used, but he's okay with it as a product of its time. Unlike George Lucas, this is his quote, "I had no desire to go back and correct it with modern technology. Let it live in the time that it existed with all the flaws. That's where it belongs."
I couldn't agree anymore.
Yeah, I mean, just like we said, it makes it look like a 70s docuporn.
Yep.
Leave it be. That's what, you know, fits. Cronenberg has mentioned that he believes Dan O'Bannon borrowed heavily from the creatures in this film for his own movie in Alien 1979. Cronenberg stated, "I have to say that some of my images, like the parasite, ended up in things like Alien, which was much more popular than any of the films I've ever made. But the writer of Alien has definitely seen these movies. Dan O'Bannon, the idea of parasites that burst out of your body and uses a fluid and leaps on your face, that's all in Shivers."
Yeah.
And as recently as 2015 Collider interview, Cronenberg mentioned how Alien totally ripped off things from my movie Shivers.
Yeah.
I could see that.
I do. Yeah.
And it's funny too, because there's been a big debate with Alien Romulus recently about whether or not Ridley Scott was actually, for years, everybody gave him all this credit for Alien being so popular and well done and all that, but when he started making Prometheus and Alien Covenant, it's really fractured the fan base, and a lot of fans are like, I don't like the direction he went with it because he over-explained things, he did some weird stuff. It's kind of being hinted at now that maybe Dan O'Bannon had way more to do with the popularity of Alien and the writing of the movie, and that it really, Scott just got lucky because he directed such a well-written script.
Yeah.
Didn't do it badly, but he didn't have as much hands in it as he is now. And that kind of made it a better movie, you know, because remember the reason Dan O'Bannon couldn't even direct a movie Alien was because he was directing another little movie that we covered called Return of the Living Dead.
And never heard of it.
Yeah. Did awesome with that. So,
yeah.
Cronenberg cast Lynn Lowry as Nurse Forsyth because of her haunting eyes and strange screen presence. I'll give him that. Yeah. She does have that.
100%. And I saw that on an interview that I was watching about this. And, yeah, haunting eyes, and she definitely has screen presence. It's her good looks. I'm going to just throw it out there.
Yeah, it totally is. I mean, she stands out in the film. Like, every time she's on screen, it's like your eyes are going away from the creepy stuff that's happening in the background. And it's like, oh, thank God, Nurse Forsyth is back in this movie.
Yes.
So I can look at something. Susan Petrie was unable to cry, so David Cronenberg used onions to help her produce tears. It worked, but the camera was out of focus when the scene was shot. Cronenberg was out of onions, so Petrie agreed to let him slap her on the face. He slapped her until her face went numb. And then Barbara Steele, the other actress in the scene, was not informed and thought David had been beating her. After the last take was finished, she angrily confronted Cronenberg, holding him off the ground by his collar as she shouted at him, threatening to beat him up. Scared, Cronenberg told her that what really went on. And once the other actress confirmed the story, they all had a good laugh about it.
That's hella funny.
Can you imagine Betts in this movie, the goth queen, gets pissed off camera, goes up to you, holds you up off the floor, is like, you better not be beating her, you son of a bitch. You know, like, it just, that blows my mind to think about.
You have to there has to be an anger behind that is unfathomable. I've done it one time in my life to my best friend. We will both never forget it. He took my lunch money. So he took my lunch money and used it when he was supposed to get me food, and I lifted him off the ground. And he is much bigger than me.
That's the thing. I don't know how tall. I feel like Cronenberg's a tall dude, but maybe he's not. But anyways, I don't feel like Barbara Steele was. So that would have had been a sight to behold. Every scene in this movie contains something yellow or gold.
An orange, if you ask me. David Cronenberg is 5'9". What's her name, Barbara Steele?
Yeah.
Barbara Steele, if I can, let me see. Height, there we go. She is 5'6".
Okay, so, well, there's not that much of a height difference.
But still, let's just point out the obvious. She's a woman. I'm not saying women are the weaker sex, but women are not as physically strong as men. I'm sorry. It's just we are stronger in other aspects, but lifting men off the ground is not our thing. I am telling you, you have to have an anger force to give you that kind of strength. She was pissed.
And yes, if you took a Rhea Ripley to, you know, feature current goth mommy as she likes to go by, that's wrestling, and put her against the weakest man, yes, she could beat the shit out of him. But we're talking about, on average, take the average guy, average woman, it usually skews toward the guy as far as the physical strength.
Yeah.
We're not talking about it, because people always do that. It's like, are you trying to say that you could beat up real? No, I'm not saying that. That's a stupid argument. Don't go that route. Ask about the shifting pathology of the slug and its abilities. Cronenberg says, if there are inconsistencies, it's either intended or it's my fault. It's my disease to play with.
Oh, I love
that answer.
No, absolutely. It is. It is his.
It's like, it does that because I said so. Barbara Steele's bathtub scene features a leg double in the shots of the slug in the tub near her.
I wonder why.
Maybe she, I don't know, was feeling embarrassed that day about something about how her legs looked, and they had to get a double in there. It's really weird when you're filming scenes like that, because, like, we've said this numerous times, there's been, like, actresses that was like, yeah, if I have to be naked in the movie, I will be to get into the movie. Once they get in the movie and they get a little bit of clout behind them, they're like, I would never do anything like this.
Not
and then
me.
They have to, you know, it's, and then they have to get a double in. It's a whole thing. It's dumb. I mean, if somebody lied to you and they try to force you, because we've had that happen on this podcast too with some of these movies, some of the slashers, where they tell you, it's like, you're going to have to take your tits out. It's like, that wasn't in our contract. That's bullshit. Don't do that. But if you signed up to do it, I mean, it's kind of shitty if you just expect that to go away as soon as you get to the point where it's got to be filmed. I'm sorry. Ivan Reitman produced the film, but he's also credited as music supervisor. We couldn't afford to have a traditional score, so it's all needle drop music that Reitman acquired. It wasn't until 79's The Brood that he was able to hire a composer in Howard Shore, with whom he has since collaborated with 14 more times. It is so insane to think that Howard Shore, who is the man behind Lord of the Rings music. I'm pretty sure that's the same guy is Cronenberg's like go-to man, starting it all the way back at The Brood. Because you think of that classical, like, Lord of the Rings, like, orchestra music, and you think of, I mean, I know we didn't do Shivers, but you think of, like, movies like that, and you're like, what?
Exactly.
What the fuck is this? The movie was filmed in and around a condominium complex on Nuns Island off Montreal. The cast and crew lived in the building during production.
Oh, that must have been nice. That's convenient.
It looks like a nice enough place. It looked cold, but, I mean, it's Canada, so what do you expect? Yeah. The original script title was Invasion of the Blood Parasites.
I mean, yeah.
I think Shivers is better. It just to the point.
Yeah.
The star of Cronenberg's first two films, Stereo and Crimes of the Future, was Molesdick, or however you say it,
who appears
Moldy Dick, who appears as the salesman. It was my pleasure to get him into a movie where he could be paid, is what Cronenberg said.
Wow.
Those weren't really movies, though. They were, but they were more like, you know, just passion projects. This was his, like, first official film, so.
Yeah.
According to Lynn Lowry, the shoulder that Nurse Forsyth stabs with a fork is actually Cronenberg's. Pad was inserted under his shirt for her to stab, but she missed, and she really stabbed him.
Hell yeah.
With a fork. Also known as the Parasite Murders, and They Came From Within, or the other names.
They came from within because they came.
And from they within. Were within.
Mm-hmm. 100%.
According to Lynn Lowry, she couldn't get along very well with Paul Hampton during the shoot. Can you imagine, like, your primary person you're supposed to act against, your love interest, and the two of you can't get along?
It happens.
It's one thing if you get, like, you know, and you know, whatever, it split up a marriage. But, like, if you get, like, Brad Pitt, Angelina Jolie, they start acting Mr. and Mrs. Smith, and they're like, hey, we're just going to fuck in real life because we're having, you know, something's going on here. Like, that works for your movie, but when your leads are supposed to be into each other, and then you're like, I can't stand this motherfucker. It's like, that's not going to work too well. Some articles list Susan Petrie as being a porn star, but she only appeared in one X-rated film called Loving and Laughing in 71 before Cronenberg cast her in this and didn't even appear nude in it, let alone have sex.
I mean, it's guilty by association. I hate to say it. That was a thing, so.
But that's two people in this movie, two women in this movie that were associated with porn, which lends itself even more to the subject matter of the movie.
You gotta tell me that Nurse Lowry, is that what she was?
Forsyth, played by Lowry.
You can't tell me she doesn't look like a fucking porn star.
She was. She was in that X-rated movie I told you about called Sweet Cookies or whatever it was.
Oh, God. Yeah, she might have had a sweet cookie.
Sugar cookies. That's what
my God. It was.
Barbara Steele in the pool where her shirt becomes translucent, reveals her nipples, is the closest that we ever came to seeing her show any nudity during her entire career.
God, so many teeny tiny titties in this movie. It was very unenjoyable.
And then finally, toward the end of the film, the infected jump into the pool. According to audio commentary with crew and critics, many crew members took off their clothes and jumped in. The footage remains in the final cut. Yep,
they just decided to get naked and jump, so.
I'm pretty sure that I remember it was one of these movies, and I'm pretty sure it was this one. It was Lynn Lowry, an older Lynn Lowry, was talking on the special features saying that there were, like, the crew specifically, any scenes where it was kind of like lewd and they might actually get a peek at something, especially in the pool scene. I think that's the one. She said they were just kind of standing around, like, all the guys, like, when they were calling each other and was like, yeah, let's go watch this while it's being filmed. And, like, she said it was very uncomfortable for her. She's like, they just all gathered around and they were just, you know, graping her as it were. So, which fit with the movie, I guess, but in a really bad way.
Yeah, that sucks.
Closing thoughts. I mean, for me, I think this is a 3 out of 5. I'm surprised at how disturbing this movie is on a couple of different levels. It gave me the anxiety of the zombie stuff, like I said, but at the same time, the stuff going on in the background, it's just like it makes you, it's like, okay, this movie proves a point that we have to have some kind of like, you know, there has to be some kind of rules in society, or, I mean, we get this kind of shit and we don't want this at all. So, and I think as far as the concept goes, it's a little bit goofy in the beginning with the doctor creating it, but the idea of like a parasite actually using its host to spread itself in this way, I think is kind of actually smart. I think, you know, Cronenberg, he's always kind of had some smart science behind his weird concepts. And I think this, you know, was the start of that. And it's just like, okay, that makes sense enough for the movie to work.
Yeah.
So, I mean, the acting's not the best, so I can't really give it points for that. Visually, like I said, it kind of fits for what it's, I mean, if you go with a porn aspect, but at the same time, it's not like stand out. But I think how it was executed, for me, it works well enough that I would rewatch it. 3 out of 5.
Yeah. This movie was so a snooze fest for me. It was, but it wasn't, because you got the scenes that kind of perked you up. And you're like, are you fucking kidding me? Like, what the hell am I watching? I must have said that so many times watching this. But then, like, the quiet scenes in between, and I know it kind of got to the action pretty quickly, but the quiet scenes kind of put me in a little small comatose of, this is lame. And then you got the action again, and I was kind of in between, in and out of consciousness, if you will, with this film. I did not enjoy it. I did. Shut up. Did not. I wouldn't say I it was hard to enjoy the film. Now, I do understand. I really feel like there's an underlying message in this movie, big time. And whether people enjoyed it or whether people were irked by it, or but maybe a little bit of both, I think the message is kind of important, honestly. If that's what he intended, I don't know that he intended it, or if he just wanted to make a docu-porn, you know.
So, sometimes you don't intend these things, and they come out, and the it takes on a whole new message or a whole new thing that actually is beneficial.
That's all I got from it, was there's a message. I feel like the message was kind of important. It helped me kind of, I don't know, feel a certain way of what people were experiencing on different ends of that. I mean, I know there had to be, the extremes would have been the people that were the sex craved, you know, fucking infected. The far other side would have been any conservatives. And then there's people in the middle like, well, as long as they're not bugging me, I don't care. Maybe kind of understanding where the conservative people were, no sex, you know, like that are coming from. That was kind of going through my head while I was kind of analyzing this film and thinking, what am I getting from this film? Because I'm not enjoying the film as a movie, as a horror film. I don't feel like it was a zombie film. It wasn't scary. It did have some intensity to it. But one of the words I've heard so many people describe this film and the next film we are reviewing is palpable, which is kind of a description of something that's so intense but also could happen or almost be tangible. I don't feel like that in the sense of the weenie worms, but in terms of the fucking sexuality and the, you know, extreme, I don't know, liberation of the sex, that is definitely palpable.
Or society breaking down and people just becoming monsters like this.
Yes. Yes, so I will give them that. This movie is a 2 out of 5 for me. Like I said, the message is decent enough. It was a 70s film, so that's hard for me. It's rare that I enjoy a 70s film. So that's to be, this is pretty much to be expected for me at this point.
Listen, Mr. Foot expert himself, Quentin Tarantino, would be upset with you because according to him, the 70s and the 90s were the only time period when good movies came out.
Okay.
And fuck you if you thought that anything good came out in the 80s, because you're wrong, or if anything came out after that. So, of course, I'm just saying what he said, you know.
And that's fine that he feels that way, but he's not going to be changing me anytime soon.
I don't agree. I watched a podcast or a YouTube video literally last night, I think it was, where they were going over, like, films of the like their top 5 films of during the 80s, and they went up to 85. 84 and 85 had so many fucking good movies that we still to this day, like all genres, not just talking about scary movies, talking about comedies.
Yes.
Like they were rattling them off. If you went to the movie theater every week in 1984 and 85, you would have found a movie to this day that's considered, like, you know, top score. Like,
yeah. And that's, it's so funny because I'm finding that there's movies from the 80s that maybe I didn't enjoy the movie as a whole, but there's something I liked from it. Maybe I either liked the story, but I didn't like the acting. Or I liked the acting, I rarely liked the acting, but I didn't like the story. Or I liked, you know, the visuals of it, but I didn't like the movie in general. So I'm finding that about the 80s. 80s still has some of the best movies. I think 90s did pretty good too, but like, I don't know. I definitely enjoyed 80s more than I enjoyed the 70s, so.
Yeah, the 70s to me are very hit and miss. I mean, when they have bangers like Jaws, when they have Texas Chainsaw, they stand out because they are very raw. They're very, like, they got a punch to them.
Yes.
But, like, the 80s just had, like, so many more movies. Like, if I wanted to sit down and just watch a movie, it's like, put me on an 80s movie like Beverly Hills Cop, you know, like, Back to the Future, anything, you know, it's like Indiana Jones. It's like one after the other. It's just, I get where he's coming from an indie perspective. There was more indie films in the 70s and more in the 90s, but that doesn't to me automatically mean it's a great movie because it's an indie film.
Exactly.
So, and the 70s definitely had a different feel, and I can get where you're coming from on that because, like, they were very much like, there was a lot of, I don't know the exact way to describe it, but there was a lot of like risk taking in the 70s. And that maybe that's why Tarantino loves it so much, but like sometimes risk pay off like huge rewards.
Yes.
But other times you're just like, did you really need to make this movie? Like, I mean, come on now. Like,
yeah.
I mean, it's boom or bust when it comes to that.
I think the movie should exist. I don't think that this movie should not be out there. There's going to be people no matter what. Clearly, I got a message from this film, and I don't know that, like I said, we were like, intended or not, this is the message I got. And I was like, well, let the movie exist. I don't have a problem with that. There's going to be people that enjoy certain things, and I'm like, that's, that it is what it is. Now, I don't know that David Cronenberg intended for that, but he fucking put it out there. That's all I'm going to say. So,
yeah. And like I said, I think that stuff is just off-putting enough to where it's just like, okay, this movie makes a bold statement. So yes. That's the reason I appreciate what it's doing.
Exactly. I do think people should go watch this movie. Sometimes there'll be a movie I'm like, fuck it. I don't recommend it. I think people should watch this movie. And I want to know if anybody has watched it. What do you think of it? Do you think I'm crazy? Like, do you think that, why did I come up with a message watching this film? I think I might have overanalyzed it because I was not having a great time. So
I don't know that you overanalyzed it because it's one of those things that it like hits you enough as you're going through that you've got to at least face it or look away. And in looking away, you're like, you're acknowledging that it's bothering you. And
yes.
So it's still having an effect. I mean, cause I'm sure, and please, you know, send in comments about this. Sometimes your mind puts in more stuff. There might've been stuff that we didn't see that we thought we saw in this movie, but the kids on the leash were clearly in this movie. Cause I saw them and I'm
yes.
like, nope.
I've heard people talk about them because it's so quick and they don't go into depth, but the one where it shows the dad kissing the daughter, nobody talks about that. Nobody's talking about that.
And that's in the movie. There's no denying that that's in there. I mean, the hero of the movie is forced to watch this just as we are.
So,
anyways, folks, let us know what you think. And with that, peace be with you.
And with your spirit. We'll be right back.